My name is Brian Novoselsky, and I'm an associate editor with Drug Topics. Today, I'm joined by Jennifer Zilka and Kyle Pudens. Zilka is Senior Vice President of Community and Specialty Pharmacy at Cencora and President of the Good Neighbor Pharmacy Network. And Pudens is the Senior Vice President of Analytics at Cencora. Welcome and thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. Glad to be here.
Today, we're going to be discussing recent insights into pharmacy deserts in the U.S. and what is being done to address them. Powered by Cencora, Zilka and Pudens and their colleagues recently collaborated on the development of an interactive dashboard detailing valuable insights regarding pharmacy deserts. So to start us off today, what are the most common trends or characteristics of areas experiencing pharmacy deserts?
Yeah, I'll start. And then Kyle would absolutely welcome your expertise and data analytics on the topic. But I mean, in a nutshell, a pharmacy desert is a community where there's no accessible pharmacy. You know, it means not only are patients not able to access their prescriptions and speak in person with their highly trusted healthcare advisor, which is often their local pharmacist, but as we all know, and as we saw through the COVID emergency, pharmacies play a larger role for their patients beyond filling those prescriptions, right? They're providing clinical advice, testing, immunizations, and many other necessary services to maintain good health. So a pharmacy desert is really where patients don't have access to those services because there's not a pharmacy that's accessible in the market. And the other thing we've learned, and Kyle, I will let you take this a step further since you have more data on it than I do and more expertise. But one thing we know is pharmacy deserts tend to affect underserved populations more heavily. So Kyle, I'll let you kind of maybe sure. Expound on that if you don't mind.
Yeah. So I think it's important when we're talking about anything, and me being an analytics person, it's really focused on what's the actual definition, right? Just so that we're all speaking with the same terms. And so we actually leveraged the published literature for this space and went back to say, okay, what does that literature say is the definition for a pharmacy desert? And we anchored on the rule that pharmacy deserts are when there is no pharmacy available in an urban area within a mile of that patient. In a suburban area, that's a couple of miles. And then when you get to rural areas, that extends out to 10 miles. And that's really used along with U.S. Census data so that we can actually get down to very specific census tract level information, leverage those demographics and some of the information that's available there, and map it onto, you know, an understanding of where these pharmacy deserts exist. And when we do that, we can see that there are more than 30 million people within the United States that actually live within these pharmacy deserts. And so I think what's interesting is when you get into this, you can see that the pharmacy deserts, a lot of times people equate them to rural areas, but the reality is that the initial paper that actually introduced this concept, it really mapped from the idea of a food desert, it is really present in urban areas. So Dr. Dima Cato, who was at the time out of the University of Illinois Chicago, did a study on the Chicago area. And so this concept of pharmacy desert actually pertained specifically in her research to the greater Chicagoland. So I think it's really important to keep in mind is that this is really an issue that extends across that rural, suburban, urban landscape. It's not just one part of the demographics of the U.S. that this impacts.
Awesome. Obviously, we have someone from the analytics side and the pharmacy side to kind of explain really what's going on. So as we know, pharmacy deserts arise when proximal access to pharmacy services diminishes in specific locales. With unprecedented amounts of pharmacy closures in recent history for both big box chain and independent pharmacy locations, what do you think is the main catalyst for pharmacies closing their doors? In other words, why are pharmacy closures more of a concern now than they have in the past?
Yeah, I'll take that one and start. And Kyle, of course, please add your thoughts. But candidly, pharmacies, whether they're large chains or small independents, are struggling today to remain financially viable. And that's primarily due to inadequate reimbursement rates for the medications that they dispense and the care services that they provide. So as reimbursement rates decline, or in some cases maybe even disappear with the expiration of the COVID-19 public health emergency, pharmacies are finding it increasingly difficult to remain financially solvent and in turn are unable to be there for their patients. So an example of that, a specific example would be, currently Medicare Part B does not recognize or reimburse pharmacists as providers. So if you kind of extrapolate the absence of that first line of care for patients across the nation in general, what does that mean? More than 90% of people in the US would live within 5 miles of community pharmacy. And there's additional research out there that shows that more than half of Americans are likely to first seek non-emergency healthcare at pharmacies, right? So they're very comfortable. They trust their pharmacist. They open up, they share what might be happening with their health. And the pharmacist often is a very important conduit between the patient and their physicians. And in addition to patients feeling very comfortable sharing with their pharmacists and they trust them, patients tend to visit their community pharmacy 1 to 2 times more often than they visit their physician. So they're very accessible, they're very trusted. And I think this would be especially true for the underserved, the socially vulnerable patient populations, which I know Kyle talked about urban underserved areas. Our Good Neighbor Pharmacy Network organically is positioned both in urban underserved areas and very rural areas. They're already destined and are already caring for these patients due to their location, but also the high touch nature of the services that they provide. So if you think of any small town, you drive in, you see that pharmacy, right? It's typically in a prominent position. It's often very busy. So they are very uniquely positioned to provide the access. But candidly, we just have to keep them financially viable and really work on ensuring that they have access to the patients and reimbursement models that allow them to continue to provide that high level of care. So, Kyle, I don't know. I hope I didn't steal any of your thunder, but would love to
Oh,
hear from you too.
not at all, Jenny. Those are all excellent points. And what I would add to that is it's in addition to the challenges those stores face today, when you start to see more closures, and especially when you see some of the larger chains that are making some really important financial decisions for their own future, when they're closing their facilities, that adds even more pressure to these community pharmacies who are now absorbing a lot of those patients. And because they're trying to maintain that high touch feel, right? Like the way they deliver that service and connect with the patient really demands a lot more. And when you have a sudden influx of patients into your pharmacy, it can be very exacting on that organization. And so as we start to see more closures occur, it's really going to continue to exacerbate the problem that you see with pharmacy deserts, and especially in these underserved and communities where you have more socially vulnerable people who are already challenged with healthcare access.
Yeah, absolutely.
Moving on to kind of accountability, who do you believe holds the responsibility of addressing pharmacy deserts across areas of the US?
I'll start because I feel really strongly about it, but I believe it's all of us. It's crucial that pharmacies, trade organizations, advocates, peers, and even patients relentlessly push for the changes that are needed to support the longevity of these pharmacies and the care that they provide to their patients. Community pharmacies they are a huge part of the solution to combat these healthcare deserts, whether it's a pharmacy desert or an overarching larger scale healthcare desert, just given who they are and the fact that they're already taking care of these underserved and socially vulnerable communities. So our Good Neighbor Pharmacy members, they work tirelessly to look for gaps in care where they're able to maybe provide different services, different products, have outreach into different communities to make sure that they're caring for their entire community. And then the teams within Good Neighbor Pharmacy and Kyle's team within Cencora, we're very passionate about supporting their efforts. So in addition to all of us doing all the things we're doing that are really important, one thing we've done internally is worked with Kyle's team, as we mentioned, to help our members with detailed snapshots of their communities. And again, look for those gaps where they might be able to provide tailored services or products to those patients. And, as part of this effort, as Kyle mentioned, we worked with NCPDP, we worked with the CDC's Social Vulnerability Index, the US Census and American Community Survey pulled all of that information together. And this was Kyle's team that did that. So, Kyle, we are eternally grateful for it. But what we learned is we always knew where our Good Neighbor pharmacies were positioned, and we always had a good feel for who their patients were. But through Kyle's team's efforts, we were able to identify that 20% of GNP stores either directly serve or are adjacent to pharmacy deserts. 93.5 million US households are within reach of a GNP store, and 20 million of those reside in a low pharmacy access area. We also know that GNP pharmacies can serve more than 47.7 million low-income individuals, including of those 9.5 million have limited access to a pharmacy. And then we also, Kyle did some, and his team did some research around disabled individuals. And there's 26 million disabled individuals, including 5.5 million who face limited access that are within reach of a Good Neighbor pharmacy store. So through that data, we've been able to really validate kind of who are, which patient populations our pharmacies are caring for. And we're really passionate about ensuring that our pharmacies have access to that information and are able to tailor their services accordingly. So Kyle, I'll let you, because your team did all the work. Please feel free to expound on that.
No, I love all the facts and figures. You could join our team anytime, Jenny. As Jenny said, we really developed this solution. I think understanding our place as Cencora and how can we help enable our pharmacies serve their communities, right? And so the idea is that we can access this data, we can integrate a lot of this together in such a way to give them better visibility and insights into not just the customers and patients that are coming through their doors already, but what does that greater community actually look like, and give some visibility into the broader surroundings, help them better plan some accessible services that they may be able to provide these communities. So for many of them, they can now leverage the data to really prioritize resources. So now they have this understanding of what that larger population looks like, and then provide, some support and interventions in areas where there are a greater need for medicine and healthcare services and vaccines. So all of those things I think are super important. And then one of the ways we did that, and I think Jenny referenced some of these, is we really went out and found some publicly available data that's out there. And this is, available through US Census information to give us a lot of demographics. But we coupled that with some geospatial analytics to really give us that overlay of the demographic and other factors that really impact social vulnerability. And, in addition to some of the things Jenny highlighted, things like access to transportation, that's a real big one, right? Because I think sometimes people wonder, like, why is the limit within an urban area just 1 mile? Well, you have different access to transportation in different areas, or a need even. So, the likelihood that someone who's ill or elderly would have to go that far in that scenario without transportation, it really starts to limit whether or not they are going to be able to access that. So by giving our pharmacies information and insights, they can actually develop services to help them actually reach and connect with these patients to provide those services that they're looking for. So far, the data has really challenged what our prior assumptions and biases would have led us to previously believe. So pharmacy owners often find that the pharmacy deserts aren't necessarily where they expected them to be previously. In fact, the data and insights shared help some of those pharmacies recognize that they're actually situated, as Jenny mentioned, that they may not realize that they're actually either in or directly adjacent to a desert themselves. So I think that's been pretty eye-opening. And then by doing that, where they suddenly have this visibility, now it can help those pharmacists identify new clinical and marketing opportunities that really help them serve their communities even better than they were before.
Awesome. Moving aside to kind of one specific player that could serve a role in this issue, is there anything being done on either state or federal levels to address this issue?
Yeah, there is a lot of activity, and in fact, we've had some wins that we're very excited about at both the national and the state levels. But there's still so much more work to be done that we together can achieve what's needed for pharmacies to remain financially viable, and that includes, not it includes improving reimbursement frameworks, but it also includes helping to expand the clinical care services that pharmacies are able to provide. So There is a lot of activity. Unfortunately, we were hoping that some of it would make it across the finish line at the end of the year, and it didn't. And as you know, I think as we all know, we're in the midst of a new administration, which is highly unpredictable. But there does continue to be a lot of activity, visibility, and even legislative bills that are on the table that we are very hopeful or watching very, very closely that they will cross the finish line and be included in an upcoming package. So one of them is around stabilization of reimbursement rates. And again, we're watching that one very, very closely. The other one is the Equitable Community Access to Pharmacist Services Act. We call it ECAPS because it's a mouthful. That was introduced last Congress. It had robust bipartisan support. Goal was aiming to ensure, as I mentioned before, that Medicare beneficiaries have access to the essential services, including tests and treatment of common infectious diseases by establishing a Part B reimbursement pathway for pharmacies to deliver those services. So those are a couple examples. There's a lot happening. Positive change is not guaranteed, but you know, as I truly believe, this is an area I'm really passionate about, and I spend a lot of time on, is that if we continue to advocate and ensure that legislators are aware of the danger of losing these pharmacies and really the danger to their patients and their constituents, I'm ho very hopeful that advocacy is essential to ensure accessible healthcare for our patients and then will serve as really our industry's primary defense against the spread of these pharmacy deserts. So a lot happening on that front. We're keeping a very, very close eye on it, and we're hopeful that we will see some federal activity, and there's just a ton happening in the states as well. So a lot of activity and a lot of hope along with that activity.
Awesome. Yeah, definitely a lot of hope. In the meantime, kind of looking toward the future, do either of you guys think that there is a future that exists where pharmacy deserts are no more? And if so, what really needs to be accomplished in order to get there?
Kyle, I'll start this one real quick because I think it's a carryover to what I was just saying. But I mean, ultimately, reimbursement reform and expansion of scope of practice is crucial. If we can get those things through, if we can get get the activity moving into, you know, reality, I think we absolutely can make a difference and we can slow the spread of pharmacy deserts. And then I also think just making sure that we're, you know, collaborating, some of the things we're doing within Cencora, Good Neighbor Pharmacy, that our pharmacies do day in and day out to care for their patients. But working with Kyle's team, digging in, ensuring our members are equipped with all of the tools and the actionable insights and the data that help them expand maybe their patient base potentially, or the services and products that they provide to them, will allow them and enable them to continue to deliver the essential services that they do in their areas. But Kyle, I'll kind of let you take this one if you would, because I think there's more as you think about the data and ways that we can leverage that to ensure we stop the spread. I think there's some things that we can do there. So I'd love your thoughts.
Yeah, absolutely. So I would first say I think it's really critical that we challenge misconceptions and confusion about, you know, pharmacy deserts, their surrounding areas, and because that often can lead to inconsistencies in identifying them in the first place, and then we overlook certain communities. And from an analytics perspective, I often look at problems like these by going to the definition itself, right? So the definition of that pharmacy desert being a certain mileage, a distance away from a pharmacy. If we're able to provide our pharmacists better insights and information about the presence of communities and for them to proactively reach out and address these patients, maybe that changes the definition altogether because maybe a mile is no longer relevant, right? Maybe they're able to connect with these patients in a way that they can get them their medication where that's not the hurdle, that maybe there's another issue that we can move to and address. But I do think that that's, for me, when I look at the future, it's there's so many ways now that we are able to connect with a broader community that makes the distance not as much of a factor as it historically has been.
So lastly, and you guys kind of already touched about this, focusing specifically on community pharmacies that have closed in the recent past, which has created pharmacy deserts in rural and urban locales. How is the role of independent community pharmacies being considered as public health and government officials look to address pharmacy deserts? So Jenny, you already touched about this, but kind of just encapsulating the important role community pharmacists and pharmacies play. Can you just touch on how they're being looked at?
Yeah, I'm happy to do that. And I think we've covered a lot of it, but we know that their role, the pharmacist's role, is shifting beyond dispensing medications and moving toward providing more patient care services and in turn meeting the broader public health needs, right? So a couple, if I think about the impact that pharmacies can make from a public health perspective, we know that with COVID vaccine, pharmacies administered 31.3 million doses between September of 2023 and April of 2024. In contrast, during that same time, physician medical offices administered 2.5 million, right? We experienced it firsthand with the COVID pandemic that pharmacists can step in and play a really important public health role. And there's more and more studies coming out on this that quantify that value from a public health perspective. We know that in 2020, pharmacists improved medication adherence for diabetes patients, right? They increased their use of statins. They ensured they had annual flu vaccinations. They did A1C tests. They helped patients maintain a tobacco-free. I mean, they did so many things specific to just these diabetes patients that were able to measure the impact on the patient's health. And then close those gaps in care. So, from a public health perspective, I think as they work to address pharmacy deserts, supporting these pharmacies, particularly the community pharmacies, is key in ensuring that they're able to continue to service their patients in that high touch way that they do. And I think within Good Neighbor Pharmacy, we're really passionate about it. We believe wholeheartedly in the level of care that they provide. And we're very confident in their position in the future and in this kind of healthcare ecosystem, that their role is incredibly important. And we will continue to work to amplify their value and their impact within their patient population. But a very, very passionate topic for us. You probably can tell by both Kyle and I. But our pharmacies already do such a great job that the stats speak for themselves. They take amazing care of their patients, and they in turn impact their clinical outcomes, which is, paramount in a public health emergency or in public health in general, I guess.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, I really appreciate you guys taking the time today. This is obviously a very important topic that encapsulates so many different areas of not only pharmacy, but healthcare as well. So I really appreciate you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.